Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
We've been speaking a fair amount about this whole notion of land, land expropriation, or is it confiscation? That's, I guess, the question. Joining us on the line is Dr. Anthea Jeffrey, head of a policy research for the Institute of Race Relations. A very good morning to you. Thanks for joining us so early on a public holiday. What have you done to deserve it?
I've been working on the expropriation bill since it first came out in 2008, probably.
All right. So then this is all in a day's work. All right. So how serious is it? Because my understanding was that the Constitution always allowed for land expropriation. What is now being changed, offered, and how dangerous is this?
You're quite right. The Constitution does say that expropriation is permitted for public purpose in the public interest, which includes land reform. But it must be accompanied by just and equitable compensation, which should be agreed or decided by a court before the expropriation takes place. What the Constitutional Amendment Bill is intended to do is to allow the courts to decide that just and equitable compensation could be nil. And then the amendment bill goes on to say that Parliament will pass new legislation from time to time by ordinary 51% majority, setting out the situations in which the court may decide on the nil compensation option. So we don't know how often nil compensation will apply. But beyond that, people might think, well, that's not so bad. The courts will have to decide before any expropriation goes ahead. But that's where the expropriation bill comes in, because it tries to lay down, it certainly makes it clear in its wording, though I think this is unconstitutional, that an expropriation can proceed before there's been agreement or a court has decided on the amount of compensation. And this has been done by really making the only time limit in the bill that ownership can't pass to a municipality or other expropriating authority before a notice of expropriation has been served. So in fact, by implication, it can pass immediately after, the day after, the week after, the month after. And the bill makes it clear that ownership will pass to the state irrespective of whether there's a dispute over compensation.
So in other words, the expropriation takes place, and then you have the opportunity.
And then you have the opportunity to go to court. But how many people can afford to go to court?
Absolutely. And how long will that take, given the position and the backlogs and the time frames?
Yes, and indeed. And then the thing that makes it even worse is that the expropriation bill tries to put the onus of proof on the expropriated owner.
Wow.
So if you want to contest, you have to prove. You have to win. And if you don't, when you pay not only your own costs, but also a substantial portion of the costs of the municipality. And it's almost impossible to win because the criteria are so vague. One of the criteria is the purpose of the expropriation. So if the municipality decides that a house on a large piece of property should be expropriated for social housing, so you should take R1 million off the market value because that's the purpose of the expropriation. How can you show that that's the wrong amount, that it shouldn't be R1 million, it should be R100,000? Because there are no criteria, no clear way of putting a monetary value on that criteria, you cannot ever be sure that you will win before the court.
Well, and I think the biggest or one of the larger issues here is that it puts the citizen in a fundamentally very, very weak position, not only because because the ownership goes through, but also because you are going up against costs of government. So it's not as though, one of the measures in a normal court case where you often find resolution is because both parties say, it's right, this is too expensive, let's sit down with a mediator or an arbitrator and let's try and resolve this because it's costing us all so much money. But when you have the state on the one side where those costs are completely irrelevant versus an individual citizen, that individual citizen is compromised before they even start.
Absolutely right. The playing field is just skewed in favor of the state. And of course, if you make expropriation very cheap and easy for the state, And we're not saying that it will always be for no compensation,
right.
But I think we'll always be for less than market value. That's the purpose of these bills. And so there is a risk that cash-strapped municipalities and other organs of state will start using expropriation very often. And this, of course, will have major ramifications. First of all, for the banking industry, because and the entire stability of the banking system.
Sure, sure. Well, the whole property market, really.
Yes, and particularly because, you know, under the current Expropriation Act, if you get expropriated, you get market value plus damages for any direct loss, such as moving costs. But also, if the value of your property, the market value of it has gone down and is now below the amount of your outstanding mortgage bond, you would get damages for that loss so that you didn't have to cover it yourself. But now, in this situation, if you get zero compensation in the worst situation or inadequate compensation, less than the amount of your bond, the bond comes to an end because the state takes the property unencumbered, but the underlying debt does not. So you still have to pay the debt to the bank, even though you've lost the asset on which you were paying off the debt. And, of course, many people will not be able to make those payments.
Mm, mm.
So the banks will immediately come under great pressure, as they've been telling Parliament, that mortgages valued at $1.6 trillion have been issued by the bank on various kinds of property, from residential through to industrial and commercial. And there could be, therefore, a banking crisis, but banks are able to collect people losing confidence in the entire system, and so on. And they say this, of course, is how the financial crisis began in the U.S.
Absolutely, with the overvaluing of 100%. Yeah. It's just a different cause, but the result is the same. How far along is this, and what is the process now to contest this or pass this?
Well, to look at the two processes, the Constitutional Amendment Bill is before an ad hoc committee, which has until the end of May now to make a recommendation to Parliament on the text to be adopted.
Right.
Once it's made its recommendation, there's the National Assembly, and then the National Council of Provinces must adopt, and the National Assembly must do so by a two-thirds majority. As regards the Expropriation Bill, it's before the Portfolio Committee on Public Works and Infrastructure of the National Assembly. That committee has, both committees have been in the process of hearing oral submissions. Both have done it very badly because you're supposed to have principle, anybody who asks in their written submission to make an oral presentation to should be invited to do so. And the ad hoc committee received 204,000 submissions. They don't adequately know who asked to make a presentation, so they've made a bit of arbitrary choice. And the portfolio committee got about 90,000, and again haven't gone through them, has made a rather arbitrary choice. So it is possible to challenge both these processes for procedural defect, and I think that the IRR and many other organizations will be interested in doing so, which could slow the process down. Because otherwise, without such a challenge, I think there's real risk that both bills will go through Parliament, certainly before the end of the year, and perhaps a bit sooner than that.
Really, really concerning, but it's very important that we're aware of this and that we understand exactly what these ramifications are.
Indeed, and we've also been arguing that it's been government policy since 2015 that every new bill should be accompanied by a comprehensive socio-economic impact assessment.
Absolutely.
That when a bill is put out for comment, a copy of that final report should be appended to it. So that, as the Constitutional Court has put it, people can know about the issue when they're exercising their right to be involved in the legislative process. And they can have, again, Constitutional Court, quote, meaningful opportunity to influence the laws that will govern them. But there's been no bias on either of these bills. There's been an incredibly superficial assessment by the state, brushing away a great deal of considered argument and evidence as to why these bills are going to be damaging to the economy.
Right.
And simply saying, well, we'll fix land reform, we'll provide redress for the past. And arguments which really make no sense, because it's not the cost of land acquisition which has been bedeviling land reform. It's things like inefficiency, corruption, elite capture.
No doubt. Well, and again, I think this is just yet another sign of how little or how poorly the ANC has done over the last while. And this is just almost trying to find a quick fix to a problem that they just haven't dealt with effectively since coming into power in 1994.
Note that on the expropriation bill, it covers much more than land. The land is being used as a sort of wage issue to open the way to expropriation. Really, we don't know just how many categories of property might be vulnerable.
Right, so that's got to be limited as well. Dr. Anthea Jeffrey, Head of Policy Research for the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR, talking to us about land expropriation. Very, very concerning subject indeed.